This is the At The Money podcast, in which I discuss growth and investment strategies with leading startup entrepreneurs and venture capital investors. My name is Thomas Mensink. I'm a startup and investment analyst at Golden Egg Check. And today I speak to the co-founders of Propel, Sunkambi Ola and Sean Owolabi. Propel is building multi-layered infrastructure for the tech talent economy. They are focused on remote talent in African tech communities and connect them to European companies like Mercedes, Farfetch, and Siemens. Sunkambi and Sean discuss what motivates them, what they learned from fundraising, and how they see the future of remote work. This episode is made possible by the NVP, the Dutch Association for Venture Capital Firms.
My name is Sunkambi, Sunkambi Ola, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Propel.
So my name is Sean Owolabi. I'm the co-founder and chief commercial officer of Propel.
Thank you so much for joining the show. I know it's busy times for you. Tell me, where are you at the moment? Because I know we've spoken in the past. I think we know each other for a couple of years now, and you're always at a different location. So tell me, where are you at the moment?
At the moment, I'm in Berlin right now. But yes, you're right. We run a fully distributed team, and we have team members across a sizable amount of countries. So yes, sometimes I have to shuttle around, but most of the time in Berlin.
I mean, I'm in Amsterdam, but I like to say I can be where the work needs me to be. So I'm really? In Amsterdam, but Amsterdam is a perfect kind of hub to just hop in a train, a plane, and just go anywhere and get stuff done.
Yeah, because you just told me you will be in London next week and in Berlin the week after, and probably a week after that you'll be somewhere else.
Exactly, and Amsterdam makes it really sweet to do that.
Nice, nice. Hey, tell me, because so as I said, we have been in touch for quite a while. Back in the day you were called Hire Free Hands, now it's called Propel. Sunkambi, what's the opportunity that you're after with Propel?
Actually, interesting that you mentioned it that way, because yes, we did go through I would say a brand evolution, not essentially a rebrand, but more of an evolution.
Yeah.
Because we've kept a lot of the elements from what we did with Hire Free Hands. Back as Hire Free Hands, we focused solely on cutting our teeth in being able to figure out the processes, the nuances, you know, the systems in place to make the placement of tech talent from distant emerging markets into European companies possible. And when we did that, in the process of doing this, we noticed a very key insight, mainly on the supply side, that every single person who we had placed into different roles for companies was connected, affiliated, or, you know, an active member of a tech community in their local environment. And this got us thinking very, very keenly that there's a huge market to be captured if one goes through the go-to-market approach of onboarding communities, because communities play a very unique role in emerging markets that they don't in that is not shaped up this way in the more developed markets. So communities are essentially the founding blocks, you know, the building blocks of the tech ecosystem in Africa, where we're starting out our growth approach on the supply side. And we realized if we could build a tool to allow communities do what they do better, at the end of the pipeline, what you get is better talent to be placed into the global workforce. And our goal is simply to use the bountiful, abundant, top quality supply of tech talent from emerging markets to solve the global tech talent shortage problem. So that is essentially what we're building now. We're building an ecosystem focused model to help communities get talent better, grow faster, grow stronger. And this way, this drives the entire ecosystem, which then gives a good output to solve the global talent problem.
And how do you do that? How do you find the right communities, and how do you motivate them to collaborate with Propel?
So whenever we ask this question, it's difficult to answer because it's a bit too straightforward. For communities, there is no existing alternative or solution built out for them. That was one of the first things we noticed. Communities exist in all shapes and forms. Some are online communities.
They're more like focused inwards, maybe, or is that what you mean?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. They are focused on the things they know how to do, and they execute these things in different ways. There is no clear standardized way. So with Propel, we simply approach a community, and it's easy for us to identify tech communities. There are so many communities there, and there are thousands across the continent. So we approach a tech community and we say, these are the things you do well. You're good at, you know, bringing people together, building that sense of belonging, helping people grow, advance individually in their, in their personal growth. Sometimes some communities are involved in training, upskilling, and the rest. Mm-hmm. Those are the good at. But communities are not essentially great at completing the last mile. And when we talk about the last mile, we're talking about access to work, access to the things that matter to these people in their professional development. You know, it could be access to benefits to help them grow in their career, or access to finance, because finance sits at the base of everything. And these are the things Propel essentially focuses on. So we just tell communities, we have these things, we give them to you. Mm-hmm. You give them to your members, meaning from the get-go, you're able to offer more value. You're able to also generate new revenue channels through this model Propel brings to you. And we simply execute this through our platform. So communities simply join the platform and direct their members to apply for roles through Propel. And these are roles that they naturally wouldn't be able to get consideration for as we go as pipeline partners to, you know, some of the biggest corporates like, you know, Mercedes, Porsche, Farfetch. And they work with us based on our model to say, okay, we trust the output of your model. Take on this particular roles and give us the best candidates possible. And this community simply have clear access, relay them to their members, and their members apply through the platform. It could be for extended benefits like community benefits, perks and deals, or even finance and credit in that sense. So it's a straightforward discussion when we reach communities, because there is nobody solving this key problem for them.
Yeah, you also call it not just placement, but you call it community as a service, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, on community as a service, just think of it essentially as like SaaS for tech communities, mm-hmm. right? That's the short version of that. And the key is it's based on two elements. Number one, there is a service stack, mm-hmm. right, that communities can use. And of course, there is like a return on efforts that communities get for using a platform like ours. The service stack is, or think of our proposition as, you do what you do best as a community. Most communities, like leading on to what Tukomi said earlier, lots of communities are specialized in one or two things. And that's for the right reason. If you are training people, you want to optimize your entire operations around your classes, your content, the trainers, all those particular things. What you can do effectively or efficiently is do other things that are training aligned as well. When your talent comes to you and says, I would like to get access to a computer, or I want to get access to a loan to get a more expensive, you know, Udemy course or a Wacom tablet. A lot of times these communities can't do that just because that's not how they are built to do that. So our sell primarily is focus on what you do best. We do the entire heavy lifting around the other value stack,
yeah.
right? And remember, we're committees structured in different ways. Some are training focused, some are mentorship focused, some are like hackathon and events focused, some are subgroups of corporate communities like, you know, Friends of Figma or Google Developer Groups, right? And what we now try to identify is what are the common threads that connect all of them, and what mm-hmm. are the common needs across board? How do we build a service stack that we can keep adding layers to layers as we grow? And of course, with the foundation of providing key value. But the other thing is what we are effectively doing is we're building this relationship because we see that communities have that base that can be scaled. If you are going to build out an ecosystem, you want to find out who are the local players and how can we empower the local players.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So rather than saying Propel is focusing on recruitment or headhunting, right, we focus on that ecosystem building. And of course, at the top of the funnel or the bottom of the funnel, we, you know, get access to, of course, the best tech talent. But this is not based on more like a transactional relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's based on a value-based
of the community. Yeah.
And exactly. And then finally, we tell these communities that for everybody that gets a job through your through our platform, for anybody that gets a loan and pays back a loan, we get some interest on that. For anybody that redeems a perk and we get a commission, we share that with the communities as well. We actually have this contracted. So the key is communities now have a more sustainable way of making revenue that was not there, you know, before now. And the other ways they could do that is look at, you know, events, sponsorships or grants. Those things aren't sustainable. So as we do the entire heavy lifting, but there is a service stack that makes it worth your time. And then there's a return on time invested that makes it worth your effort.
Yeah. And I can see that there is a shortage of tech supply in Europe, in maybe the whole world, I don't know. There's maybe an abundance of tech talent in Africa. There is this trend of going remote, having more people working remotely. Is this really fueling the growth of Propel then?
Yes, actually. So normally, when you look at it from that angle, it should be that, you know, you have shortage of demand on one side and abundance of supply on another arm of the market, and it should be a natural fit. Yes, this is actually fueling the opportunity and the space for this, but there is still, if it was a natural fit, the problem would solve itself.
Yeah.
Say one of the earliest experiences we got and what defined the direction in which Propel would be built was the need for emphasis on quality control, right? There still are a couple of challenges, or what would I call them? I'll call them challenges that reduce the natural adoption of, you know, companies being able to dive into, you know, more distant markets and find the people from there. There's still a couple of factors that make this not possible. And you're dealing with, you know,
Not possible, or do you mean that they don't dare to, or they see obstacles in that whole process?
It's actually a combination of both, right? So first of all, if you're a Google, it's easy for you. Relatively easier for you to go into, you know, a budding African, you know, city, and say, okay, yes, we want the top, you know, tech talent from here, and you will be able to get some traction on that. But for every Google, there are 1,000 other companies who are, you know, doing important work as well, who also are trying to build out teams that don't have that brand equity or leverage to be able to make that possible.
Yeah.
So that's one factor, first of all, because when you sell, you know, the potential of candidates to a company, it actually goes both ways. You also have to sell the company to the candidate because it's the talent market right now. That's how things are shaped up to be. That's one first challenge. The second part is the simple translation of the key things that matter. And when we say this, it means, you know, if you are based in Accra, for example, right? You attend a particular university there and you've had this work experience and that work experience. To a local employer there, it might be easy to understand and interpret that into knowing how good this person is. But this might not be the same for a company based in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Right? So there has to be that sort of translator in the middle saying, from this person's data, from this person's you know, skill sets, and from this person's assessment, this is what it can be condensed into in such a way that the companies in different markets can be able to understand and consume this information to then make recruitment assessments. That's another part. So in a way, we are essentially de-risking the process.
Yeah,
of hiring,
yeah.
Because every time you go into the hiring process, you're putting your dollars at risk. It could be a hire that doesn't work out. It could, you know, then take longer than it needs to. And for every bad hire, you're not only losing time, you're essentially losing money. And there's the opportunity cost of lost growth.
Yeah.
So this is very key. And then the most important aspect is then the administrative arm, which sometimes gets overlooked. But a lot of companies would hire more from emerging markets and from, you know, distant economies and, you know, remote markets, if they did not have to deal with the administrative processes that involve the labor laws and the taxes and the rest.
Yeah, yeah,
so when
yeah.
you look at the entire process, you see that there are some key steps and processes along the way that are quite critical to bringing down this iron curtain that stops companies from really going fully into this. And those are the things Propel identified, and these are the things we've built into our model and we've now embedded into the CAS platform. We essentially de-risk the process of hiring tech talent for companies. We do this through a combination of assessments, you know, verifications. We are able to communicate talent profiles. So we don't share CVs to clients. So we have a jury system where we retrieve data. We are very, very keen on deep data profiling that goes across hard skill assessment, you know, behavioral analysis, work history, and putting all these things together to develop clear skill matrix profiles that companies can then identify and see within, you know, a quick glance of 30 seconds, this person is a perfect fit and all. And this really drives really immense hiring outcomes for Propel, because we don't need to put forward 25 candidates for a role. Mm-hmm. We just put forward 4 candidates and we know, you know, 1 or 2 would make the eventual cut and get hired. So it's also, you know, solves a lot of headaches for companies and reduces the amount of time. It's essentially very quick turnaround time, where within, you know, from 24 hours upwards, you get your candidates, and then the rest is according to the pace of our clients, and they make the hiring decisions in a very seamless manner. And even after that, the employment and execution of work is also facilitated and simplified with our platform.
And the clients, you already mentioned some of the, let's say, the larger corporates, but you also target scale-up companies, right, who are in need of a lot of tech people. I'm just curious, where are you right now? So where do you stand now with this whole community as a service platform? And what are your, let's say, your top priorities that you work on currently?
Yeah, I'm sure myself and Shion would have different approaches to this, because Shion focuses on everything commercial and I focus on everything vision. But essentially, where we are with the communities, we're actually growing at a quite rapid pace, and we want to grow faster, as a matter of fact, because we are playing in open territory and we have such a huge advantage based on how rapidly we can move. Right now, we've onboarded about almost 70 communities now. Mm-hmm. in the past,
they're all in
six,
Africa,
seven, 8 months. All African communities. Yeah, yeah. So that's our primary focus right now. And this is a model that could then be deployed to other emerging markets. But there's a huge opportunity to lock in, first of all, on the African continent, and then we can look outwards. So yes, we have over close to 70 communities now. And all these communities, we actually started working with them before we developed the CAS platform. So we have this internal mantra saying, you know, figure out the process first, then productize it.
Yeah.
So we work with all these communities on a very close basis. We've been giving them, you know, jobs, perks, and all of this, and they've been getting, you know, more value to their members for the past few months. So we already essentially understand all the key points of what the product will solve for them based on our relationship with them. The size of the ecosystem, that's all the members of all these communities combined, is about 280,000 people right now. So that's already a sizable amount. We just rolled out the platform, which will then, like we said, productize the flow of, you know, access to work, access to benefits, and access to finance for these communities. And a lot of the communities are already moving rapidly to this process. So we see a very high active usage already within the first couple of days anyway. That's where we are on that side. Our goal is we want to get to 1 million people in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Within the next few months, hopefully by, let's say, Q2 next year, based on our pace. And like we said, it's we're building a very huge defensibility factor here, because our goal is to simply curate the entire African tech ecosystem. The African tech ecosystem, we make it accessible to the global workforce, and we position Propel very strategically for every other company that needs to hire talent, you know, down the line. And this demand and the need for this is only growing rapidly. So that's our primary goal for now.
And Shion, what about you? Well, what are your priorities, your challenges maybe at the moment?
Yeah, it's you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about working with Propel is the fact that we are doing work that matters, right? But also in my capacity, in my role, I work across different teams. So leading the commercial team means I work with the team on the ecosystem side. I work with the team on the sales side. I work with the team on the product side. So kind of across board. And what I effectively do is I jump in between and figure out what are the needs from these teams, right? And what are the problems that they are facing? And how can the interaction with another team solve that problem? An example can be, if we figure out that most of our ecosystem partners would appreciate more junior level jobs, right? So some communities are like, we have maybe 70%, we're a junior developer focused community. We want to get more junior level roles. So I have to think about how exactly on the demand side, so which is our clients globally, right? Can we build a funnel for more junior level roles so people can grow in that case, right? And like I said, the example of earlier, right, you might have some developers say, you know what, it would be actually nice if we're getting our finance and our jobs from here, it would be nice if we can actually get discounts on movie tickets or gym memberships from here. We have to figure out how do we get those providers. And essentially across board, how do we productize it? Because that's one of the things that we try to be very particular about at Propel. We started with testing all our assumptions first before productizing it, because effectively you're in the people business, and then you have to realize that people are, when you are scaling, you have to still be very focused or hyper focused on building value for the people you're actually serving.
Yeah.
So in that case, my priorities and the things I try and tackle every day is figuring out across board, what are the needs across teams, and how exactly do we pull levers to solve those problems.
Okay, and more the underlying question, of course, is why do you do this? Why did you join Propel, Sunkami? Why did you found it, Propel? What's the motivation driver for both of you?
So the first thing is the founding team. That's myself, Michelle, and Abel. Abel is our CTO, by the way. Yeah. We're actually all African born and raised. Before we all moved to different parts of the world, you know, right after university. Jim and myself started companies back in Lagos in the early 2010s. And we had a lot of experience in, we gathered a lot of experience quickly in building teams and building teams that could scale flexibly. That was one thing we were thrown right into at the beginning of our professional journeys. For myself and Jim, it was quite clear and quite evident very quickly that there had to be a place where all the skilled people that we actually did know could be accessed. It was something we noticed very quickly that was missing, because you know so many smart people, you need to build a team of 50 people. You can actually get them if you're in the right circles. But then there had to be an easier way, and there had to be an easier way for people who did not have, that direct access like we did. And I would say that was where that would have been the founding block of the idea. I mean, it has evolved into something much, 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 much more elaborate today. But that was the idea. We needed a platform where top quality talent from emerging markets could be seen, and where where opportunity could also meet them. That's what I would say would
on a large scale also, because that's
on a large scale. In
there
a very
probably
scalable
a lot
way.
Of initiatives on a very small scale, like in this community scale, but you decided to do it on a very large scale. Yeah,
because we just felt like the whole ecosystem as one needs to be accessible. And like Sean said, we do work that matters, right? We also have the, there's the impact element to what we do, because we also have, that emotional connection to bring in more opportunities to underserved talent, even though we are also trying to solve, the global tech talent shortage problem by finding quality talent. So it actually goes both ways. I would say that sits at the soul of everything we do. It reflects in the way we work. It reflects in the way we share our vision, because we are very, very particular about the emerging market opportunity while solving its problem at the same time.
Yeah, I saw, for example, maybe that's an illustration of what you just said in the Sifted. You were interviewed, Sunkami, a couple of weeks ago, maybe? And the topic was the salary and if it should be different if you work remotely in different countries, etc. And you said there, you can maybe explain it better, but you pay them wherever they are, you pay them similar salaries, right?
Yes, actually, so the future of work as we see it is essentially the open talent economy. This is becoming a more and more popular phrase where the entire global workforce would be a singular human cloud where you can hire from anywhere, you can find people anywhere, there is the flexibility in hiring, and we won't have as many gated systems in that case. If you're good enough, you can work from anywhere for any company or any team anywhere. And this way, there would be less disparity. I feel we are moving towards convergence eventually in terms of remuneration for talent. And convergence in this case means some particular markets would move up to the level of global standards. It might not be achievable in a perfect system, but we can make it very close. Mm-hmm. Essentially, another thing we try to do with Propel is we try to, by connecting the local talent ecosystem to the global workforce, we're raising the standard of the local talent ecosystem as well in terms of how people get paid, how people get compensated. And this is very key as a driver to for financial inclusion as well. So this is also something that's very particular to us. It also makes us and what we do quite easy to pitch. Because for the talent themselves, not just the community, by working through Propel, you're getting access to better opportunities. You're getting, you know, paid at, you know, better than the market average in this case, and it brings a lot of value from the get-go.
Is it also what drives you, Sean, to be part of that growth and financial inclusion?
It's that 100%, right? From my perspective. One of the things that I was particular about is, like Sukomi said earlier, I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria. I had access to fantastic people who were doing fantastic things. And then when I just started my run with, you know, accessing international opportunities, traveling for school, for work, what I was very strongly on the lookout for is how exactly would I, wherever I am, still make impact back home? That's quite key for me because number one, I was never running away from home, right? I was doing quite well, you know, very comfortable life. So coming to Europe wasn't necessarily me, you know, changing my status per se. But for me, what made me really stay is there is an opportunity to locally within Europe here, change minds, right? Give people or companies access to talents that they before haven't really explored before. So we have a lot of clients that have had their first Africans into work. And these are big, large corporates, right, that do like billions in revenue. You think that they actually have that on lockdown, but turns out that what they need is a partner that can help them, you know, just do a lot of the heavy lifting, right, so they can, and de-risk the process so they can focus on what matters, right? And on the other hand, when you get people into work and how it changes their lives, we have people that are earning, you know, 5,000, 10,000 euros based back in Africa right now as we speak for global companies. And this is something that before it was never heard of. And what you see is when people are earning this, they can, of course, empower their communities. They can give back. They can build better lives. So across board, it's a good thing, right? We see that we're doing... So to say the same phrase again, we're doing good work on both ways and maybe changing minds along the way. So I feel like that's a good a good enough reason to do the work.
Yeah. No, of course. It makes us happy every single day. There's this thing myself and Sean do. We don't know how much longer we can do it for, but we try to get on a call with every single person that gets placed. It makes the calendars quite thick, but we try to do this at least once. So after you started work, about a month after, you just get to talk with the founders and we talk about the entire process. And, you know, the stories we hear when we do this, I would say, is the fuel that keeps us going. Because, you know, after each call, it feels so great when you realize, you know, there are these number of people, you know, there's a whole large volume of them now because we've been doing this for a while now. And when you hear, you know, the way they love their new work, the way they're growing rapidly, the way even their employers are so satisfied, it drives down the true soul of what the open talent economy is about. And, you know, at its soul, it's about ensuring, you know, equal rights and opportunities like never before across the entire work ecosystem, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Equal opportunities as well, not just for the talent, but also for the companies, because the better talent pools you gain access to, the better the chances of survival, growth, and, you know, of a company to be able to thrive. So that is really what we're driving. We think we're playing a key role in the future of work. We think we have a very solid focus by cracking this aspect that a lot of people haven't been able to so far in terms of, you know, really connecting, you know, distance markets to the global workforce. So that's where we are.
Great. Yeah. Maybe a short little bridge to how you funded yourself, because you did raise some funding before. Sinkami, can you explain to me how you did that and what your challenges were with fundraising?
Yes. So this has its own story on its own, and I guess we could do an entire episode just about the fundraising part. But in summary, I would say we've had to really dig deep in this case, because we have built something that evolved into itself, yeah, right? Yeah. So we needed to have the privilege of observing exactly how things were shaping up and build according to what was needed. And the essence of what has just been described is you need the privilege of time. But the little advantage we had as well is we have been in revenue almost from the beginning. So we were able to really take our time and grow on our revenue. This means more steady than exponential growth at the early stages. But this also gives you the privilege to really settle, discover your problem solution fit, and then try to crack it before taking on truckloads of cash, because then it's very risky as you could grow in the wrong direction. What we did was we, of course, family and friends funding, built out, you know, the idea we wanted to at first. This was before we realized the CaaS platform would be the way to go.
Yeah.
It started out as a straightforward marketplace. And while building and trying to place people, we started to realize more insights along the way, and then we evolved in that sense. We set up the team, first of all, with a base in Lagos and a base in Portugal, because we needed team members on both sides, seeing as our model essentially means we are bridging these two markets, the European and the African markets.
Yeah.
That's our first swing. And then we also then went down the accelerator route. So we joined APX in Berlin, which is where the company is headquartered today. And that's why we're in Berlin, because Berlin is also a very wonderful tech ecosystem as well. So this way we took on some funding with the accelerator ticket as well. And we did that for about 3 months, and then came out and started, you know, the entire building, growing, fundraising part, and also learning how to sell properly in a market that you are most of the time the first person selling that item. Because the good thing about it is we were trying to do this just before COVID hit. It wasn't the most straightforward thing, because apart from proving that the process is seamless and it's an opportunity for companies, you also have to, you know, defend the quality of, you know, let's say African talent to European companies, which most of them were not familiar with. So there was that huge part of education. But COVID came around, and in a way, it's the wind blew in our favor.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess that was a good thing. And after that, we then proceeded to raise our pre-seed round, which was completed recently. And now we're going for our seed round in this case. So it's been a straightforward and at the same time not straightforward journey. Straightforward if you look at it in hindsight,
yeah.
And on a very grand scale. But of course, every company, every founding team, every founder knows the challenges that come with fundraising and how you really need to, you know, draw inner strength to keep things running. Because even at the same time, even when things might not be going the way you want with fundraising, based on whatever vertical you're in, the company has to keep growing, because that remains the major goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, we were able to also remain very financially healthy with our revenues. And it has, let's say, charted a different path for us in terms of survival of the company.
Yeah. I liked what you said in the beginning of this, of your answer about the privilege of time, because I guess that privilege of time that gave you the time to find out that you're not just a, let's say, a placement marketplace.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You
exactly.
are so much more. But I can also understand from investors, if you pitch them that, let's say, that marketplace, that they think, oh, another one, right? Or is this scalable enough? Do you see that they change now that you pitch the CaaS, the community as a service platform? Do they understand it? And it's not easy for me also. Still, it's still not easy to understand the whole scale of what you're doing and what you're building. But do you think it's easier now that you can explain the vision maybe better and that they buy into that?
Oh yeah, I would say it's much more interesting right now. I don't think we've used the word marketplace in forever. I don't know when last I heard that word, because it's really not. It's really
put
not
you
a
in
marketplace.
A box. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, and it sets the wrong impression compared to platforms you're not like. What we're building is SaaS for communities, but there is the entry point is access to work, but the potential of it goes much, much deeper than that. And I would say when we speak to investors now, it's straightforward. It's straightforward in the sense that it makes sense, because by the time you piece the elements together, it lights up a bulb, right? And then that could go in one of two ways. The investors could really get excited based on, you know, different investors also have their different approaches, saying, okay, this is novel, and wow, this is actually working because our traction and our metrics speak for themselves. Or then you could also get an investor that says, this is, something I am not familiar with, and I don't know, you know, how this could go. It really goes one of two ways. But again, I think that's how the VC scene is, and it really matters who you speak to as well, in terms of alignment. VCs are looking for, you know, what they are extremely familiar with. Some VCs are looking for the next, you know, billion-dollar opportunity that hasn't been figured out by anybody yet. So it goes both ways.
But Sean, you can be a billion-dollar opportunity, right? Because there are companies in this space, maybe with a simpler proposition, that are unicorns already. Is that also what you are after?
Yeah, 100%. If you look at the unit economics, right, you figure out, let's even break it down. There are millions of people getting into tech every year, right? On average, right, a million plus. Propel is building, we're not doing talent matching or a marketplace, we're building the infrastructure layer. So what the thread that goes through a tech person's progression journey, right, which means that at each point of their journey, we can provide value and we can derive or monetize that relationship. So think of it as the average person on a minimum, right? We can do like as little as 500 euros in terms of annual revenue per user to as much as like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, right? Doing like an absolute worst 500 euros times a million people, that's easily 500 million euro annual revenue company. Right. And that doesn't even account for, of course, the higher numbers across board, or, you know, some averages that can be applied to the equation.
Yeah.
But in terms of the numbers, it does make sense. In terms of the landscape as well, one of the things that we see is when it comes to new ecosystems, the people and the companies that capture it early are the ones that are winning. An example is the talent industry in Southeast Asia, right? That's India, even in places like Eastern Europe. What effectively happened is right now in Southeast Asia, in India, there are over 10 companies that are worth, there are 10 plus companies that are worth over $1 billion just in the talent space, right? Some are worth as much as 20 something billion dollars, some are 40 something, some are like 2 point something. And we haven't seen it at that scale yet in some other emerging markets. So what effectively is happening is there is that movement, and any company or body that can actually capture it early and drive deep and build in value is definitely going to win. Like Sukumi said earlier, what we're now trying to do is figure out how exactly do we paint this picture. We see that the VC game is a battle of wills. right? VCs are concerned about scale, are concerned about how exactly do I get other people on board? How exactly do I understand this market? Am I risk averse, or am I risk, you know, do I embrace risk? So we've learned to understand that at some point, we have to get this whole balancing approach where some feedback from VCs have actually brought us to where we are right now and helped us build our model. And some feedback were like, nah, this particular point, we would rather not have this particular feedback, or we'd rather not implement this feedback, because you know that this VC is speaking based on, you know, their angle or the way they see things. And of course, we have to, in the end, consider what we're building, our mission and impact, and make sure everything balances out well. That's quite a heavy thing to do, right, across the board. But I think there's that balance, right?
Yeah.
And like was said earlier, being a revenue generating company helps us.
Yeah, for sure.
Gives us a more objective way to look at things, right? Buys us a bit more time to figure things out.
Yeah.
But of course, we still need to scale as well. So.
Exactly. And I can imagine that you already learned so many lessons in fundraising yourself that you want to apply now for the next seed round. Maybe you can share some of your learnings, but also give some advice to other founders that are currently fundraising or plan to fundraise in the near future.
Yes. I would say a part of it was covered in the last answer anyway. It's very important. See, this is the way we see it. VCs are customers in a sense, right? They have this. They have money and they want to buy into your product. So the product has to fit what the VC wants. And different VCs have different interests. They have different targets. They have different things that attract them in that sense. So the first part is you need to actually, most of the work in fundraising is actually in identification of those aligned VCs, knowing exactly who has a higher likelihood of buying into the idea based on how your idea is, and knowing that you don't have to change what you're doing for every single piece of feedback that comes into play. You also need to know how to manage feedback from VCs, because at the end of the day, you are the founder, you are the builder, you know exactly what you're building. And if it was, straightforward to build based on all the feedback, everybody would build it in that case. So that's everybody would really. So it's important to always remember that fact and know that the fundraising process is like, you know, selling an open market. All you need is to find the right people, not for everybody to say yes to it. Because if all, opportunities were so easy to identify and never get passed on, then no VC would have ever missed out on any deal ever. And no VC would have ever invested in a company that failed ever. So once you have that as the mindset, it becomes more straightforward. You realize it's a game where you're trying to find the right people who can also see things and see even the things you are not seeing, but starting to see things from that perspective and appreciating that opportunity in that case. So a lot of homework is very key when you're fundraising, in terms of identifying, you know, the right VCs. And when you have that sorted out, you realize the process becomes, you know, a lot more straightforward, much, much more straightforward in that case.
Yeah.
In terms of my advice, the last answer is like advice anyway. But the only other thing is in the process of fundraising, no matter how long it takes, as a founder, you need to know you always have to keep growing. Right. So that's a non-negotiable.
Growing as a company or as a founder?
Growing as a company.
Yeah.
I mean, we should all grow as people, right?
Yeah, but
the company always needs to grow. And, you know, you can't essentially come to a halt in fundraising. You need to always crank out your numbers. You need to always find a way to connect both ends and, you know, and keep things above water while the fundraising process is going on. A lot of founders fall into this issue where it's like, you know, I either fundraise or it's bust. And I mean, it's not the same in every startup, of course, but it doesn't always have to be that way, especially at the early stages. And this really shows your ingenuity. And this also takes you to a deeper level that you did not know you would have been able to reach before. Because there's this funny thing Shane and I said at the last round, and we were like, you know, we are happy we only just fundraised now, because if we had done it earlier, you know, we would have not been where we are now. So we've had to, you know, grow individually, the company has also gotten to a different point where, you know, there is a clear direction in which we're moving and all of that. So it always helps to keep the train moving. I would say that's what my advice would be. Always keep the train moving no matter what.
Yeah. Sean, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I guess mine would be more from the creative side of things. One of the things I've learned in the whole fundraising effort or fundraising journey has been you have to find your story, right? The challenge as founders is we are a lot of times so busy building the business that it's difficult to really just pull your head out and say, you know what, let me focus on what's my story. How do I tell it properly, right? On a deck or, you know, on a one pager, or even how our social media, like, you know, how our different publicity assets, like how exactly do we tell our stories? People resonate with stories generally. VCs are people. VCs are very much people.
You think? Are you sure?
Unlike what I might have been previously assumed, right? But you know, when you now see that, you now realize that, because one of the things that we also see is we also see companies that have raised a lot more, building much less, respectfully, right? But that shows you that these people are. The people that are involved in building those companies are also very fantastic storytellers. And when you get people to understand your story and to resonate with what you do, then they want to back you. So we've learned to also figure out, these are the types of VCs that we'd appeal to. Also on our growth journey, these are the VCs that understand the problem, right? Rather than having opportunistic VCs alone, of course, VC is an opportunity to be captured, but it also helps to have backers that are mission-driven. An example is we just recently got into the Google Black Founders Fund program, and Google for Startups, they are fantastic people, right? They are very supportive. They are making introductions every day. The amount of traction and business we've been able to drive from just having Google as a partner has been very amazing. And that's one of the things that we know, that when a program is built for your model and builds for making you succeed, then it's easier for you to succeed. So we're getting to that place where we're balancing, figuring out how exactly do we get the best VCs, how exactly do we get the most mission-aligned VCs, but also how exactly do we get VCs that are going to challenge us and make sure that we grow a sustainable, a strong company.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the At The Money podcast by Golden Egg Check. We help companies like Propel to connect with the most relevant investors. So if you are fundraising, please reach out to us or sign up to our online speed date event via startuproulette.vc.